You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the SEA. You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the SEA.
Hello and welcome to an emergency episode of the Fabulous Pelton Cast. I'm your co-host, Kevin Pelton.
I'm Tristan Carcino, and I don't like your tone.
And we're coming to you from Renton, Washington, home of the 2020 NFC Divisional Round loser, Seattle Seahawks. We're pouring one out today for the 2020.
Well, some of
Seattle
us are pouring
Seahawks
two
season.
Out. I went true. Into my, these Rainiers were in my freezer, and I had already put two into the freezer. And then I went back and I saw a third one appeared, and I was like, damn, Kevin, real, recognize real. I was like, he knows what's up. He knows how many are necessary for this podcast.
Like Shaggy, it wasn't me.
This is not a funeral, though.
What is it instead? Is it a crime scene? Is that what you're going to call it?
This is a motherfucking crime scene.
Oh, no.
Okay, I didn't know what word to come up with until you said that, and I liked it.
Really, I mean, that is a good description of it if you're looking at it from that perspective. I got to be honest with you, I'm not upset.
You're dumb. You are dumb if you're not upset. What are you not upset about?
I mean, the Seahawks lost in the second round of the playoffs on the road.
Let me open up one or two of these Rainiers right now.
Hostile circumstances.
Has anybody ever shotgun a beer in a podcast? I don't think I've heard that before.
I feel like that has to have happened on the Joe Rogan podcast at some point.
Elon Musk did it.
That's where I was going with that, yeah.
I think Bernie did it on the Elon Musk podcast, though. You got to get the youth vote, you know? Anyway, what better place than here? What better time than now?
The Seahawks lost 28-23 to the Green Bay Packers, by the way, is the subtext of what we're saying here. I don't know.
What do you mean you don't know? How are you not worked up about this?
I mean,
what is
it
your
is
problem?
Like,
do you care about anything?
Fool me once, shame on you. Fool me for the fourth postseason in a row, shame on me.
This is not the fourth postseason in a row. This is an...
What do you mean it's not the fourth postseason in a row?
This can be pinpointed to a couple of stupid decisions. That's the issue here. This is not... The Seahawks came out sluggish. This is
they
not...
Did.
I mean, they didn't really... They didn't play that badly in the first half. I kept trying to tell you. They didn't play that badly in the first half. This cannot be placed on, really, the offense in any way. There is one person who blame can be placed on. Maybe two. I'm going to give it 1.5. We'll do the half first, and it's Ken Norton Jr., who should be fired. And I'll give you the full, and it's Pete Carroll, because the Seahawks lost this game for two stupid reasons. And that is the 40-yard touchdown to Davante Adams in the second half, and the completion of Davante Adams in third down, in a situation where if they get that ball back, they're fucking scoring. If they get the ball, you're giving me a who knows? That's what you're giving me right now? You know Russell Wilson. Have you ever seen Russell Wilson
play? I mean, wasn't
play?
That the same circumstance that Russell Wilson was in the previous drive?
Pressure wasn't on enough. Okay. Russell Wilson needs four down territory.
Maybe he should have realized that the defense wasn't good enough to get the ball back and the pressure was on enough.
Maybe Shoddy should have realized
that. Maybe he would have thrown a pass to Malik Turner again.
Did he not throw to Malik Turner because Malik Turner dropped the pass on first down?
I'm just saying he would have thrown the ball to Malik
help.
Turner. He might have
but
dropped
what I'm saying to you is, okay, we come out of the half. Davante Adams has... killed the Seahawks defense in the entire first half. And what do we hear? This was Michelle Tafoya say.
No, it's not the NFC broadcast. It wasn't Aaron Andrews either. It was Chris Myers was on the Seahawks.
No, it was a woman.
Okay, it was Aaron Andrews.
It was.
Get those two mixed up all the time.
Pete Carroll at the half, what did you say to your team? We've been here before. We know what we're doing. I don't need an impassioned speech. And I'm like, hell yeah, Pete Carroll. Let's get after it. And then he also
pretty
said.
Sure this was Chris Myers.
In the second half, we're going to have Shaquille Griffin follow Davante Adams or double team him a lot more. And they decided on the a lot more to not have it be on the two most important plays of the game. Trey Flowers could not cover Davante Adams. Ugo Amadi could not cover Davante Adams. Do you want to know? You probably don't even know this. Let me just cue up the box score here. How many Green Bay receivers had more than one catch?
I'm going to take it. It was only Davante Adams.
It was only Devontae. I mean, Jimmy Graham had three. Jimmy Graham had three, but he's not a receiver. Let me just read you the receptions for Green Bay receivers. Davante Adams. All right, let's start here. Jimmy Graham, 3 for 49. Geronimo Allison, wide receiver, 1 for 11. Jamal Williams, 1 for 9. Marquez Valdez-Scantling, really fucked over some fantasy teams of mine this year, 1 for 8. Aaron Jones, 1 for 4. Whatever Sternberger's first name is.
Jace. Yes, I have that on my box score on the
I refuse to accept that. Jordan Kumerow?
Jake Kumerow. Did not catch his only target in this game.
One target, zero receptions. Davante Adams, a DK Metcalf-like, 8 for 160. Why is Ugo Amadi covering him on the most important play of the game? Why?
I mean, it's a third.
Why?
It's a third down and long situation. You have to deal with the possibility that they're going to run in that pot, in that situation, because they're trying to run out the clock.
Maybe Ugo Amadi could deal with the threat of them running. Where's Shaquille Griffin? Where's the double team? Every time it worked, there was a double team. Rodgers was forcing the ball to Davante Adams. We saw a play earlier in the game where he threw the ball away and he was looking straight at Davante Adams and there was double fucking coverage there. Where were they on the most important play of the game? The Seahawks let us down. They deprived us of an opportunity. Stop shrugging! I mean, stop shrugging!
This is one of those things where it's easy to say this because of the fact that you don't have to deal with the alternative. So if they double Davante Adams and Jimmy Graham runs free through the secondary, you don't have to imagine that.
How about if you don't double Davante Adams and you just have Shaquille Griffin cover him? They were like, they're moving him around a lot. That's what she said at the half. Like, every other team can figure out how cornerbacks could follow a receiver, but the Seahawks, they're like, whoa, which side of the field are you going to be on? Also, Jadeveon Clowney was not even pass rushing on that last third down, the completion to Jimmy Graham that sealed the game. This was a failure in defense, and it wasn't even a failure in defense because of ability. It was a failure because of scheme, and that's the issue. Ugo Amadi, stop! Oh, the shrugging's driving me crazy. This is going to be the first time we actually fight on a podcast. I've wanted to do it many times, but it might happen here. This Ugo Amadi, as a rookie nickel dime corner who has not played that much all season, should not be expected to cover Davante Adams on the most important third down of the game. Do you disagree with this?
I mean,
are you going to shrug about that?
I don't know what went into the entire play.
It's a fucking pick.
And it was also a difficult throw that Aaron Rodgers had to drop in there. Let's be clear that this was not like Davante Adams was running there. It wasn't like the touchdown against Shaquille Griffin, or against Trey Flowers, I should say, not to impugn Shaquille. Trey Flowers earlier in the game where he was running free in like 10 yards of space and then made Trey Flowers fall down on his way to the end zone. Broke some ankles out there. This was not that. This was a difficult throw over the top that Rodgers made because Rodgers has the ability to do that. This was what we were scared of. Robert Mays never tweeted the dragon gift, but
because he was 16 of 27.
But also part of it is because of the fact that the Seahawks were blitzing Rodgers on the play.
That's Ken Norton's fault also. Rodgers did not play an amazing game. The Seahawks defense played a bad game. And they played a bad game scheme-wise. Look, their scheme is always bad. Nobody questions that. Their scheme is antiquated and can be...
The scheme looks a lot better when they had better talent out there. So maybe you should try to not run off that talent.
Maybe you should have that talent defending Davante Adams on 3rd and 8. Am I wrong about this? Like, do you disagree with this fundamentally?
No. I mean, I would prefer that Shaquille Griffin was matching up with him in that situation, but I don't know exactly what it ended up. I don't grind tape. Like, I don't know what ended up going into that play call.
Okay.
And sometimes it's best to admit what you don't know.
What I do know is that Ugo Amadi, the Seahawks dime corner.
Nickel. Leno Hill is the dime corner.
Oh my God.
Or the dime defensive back. Obviously he's not playing corner. They were
also abused by Jimmy Graham on the last play of the game, but, the last meaningful play of the game shouldn't have been. I mean, the Marquise Blair injury changed things. I understand that. And I do think that Marquise Blair will develop into a competent player. Leno Hill is done. That whole draft class, they need to separate themselves from all safeties drafted. Look, they didn't draft George Kittle. It's over. All safeties have to go from that draft class. Marquise Blair is the future of the position. And especially when they're playing, if they want to play three safeties, if they want to play a dime with three safeties. But whether you have studied the tape or not, grinded the tape, Kean Fahey. Like, that's what you're telling me right now is you're like, look, I haven't grinded the tape. I can't even judge a thing in the world, right? If you want to bring that upon us into this conversation, it doesn't matter. Ugo Amadi.
You're right, it doesn't
matter. Defending one-on-one Davante Adams on the most crucial play of the game.
The game was lost when they went down 21-3. The odds of coming back in this situation are so low.
They had the ball.
This is, I think, a legitimate criticism of people who view the game through a statistical prism, is that they get so obsessed over these minor differences. Like, you know, when Shanahan punted.
Drag the nerds.
On that 4th-and-2 in Seattle a few weeks ago. You know, the tweet was about the win probability that it decreased 2% with that punt as opposed to going for it. And it's like, yeah, sure, you should go for it because you should always choose the play that gives you the best win probability. But also, we shouldn't make it like, oh, gotcha, what a big mistake. Like, that means one out of every 3 regular seasons that will determine a game. Like, we got to understand the magnitude of shit here. And the magnitude of shit here is don't fall behind 21-3 in the game.
Why did they
don't
fall-
go on the road
Why
to play the Packers?
Fall behind 21-3? Because Trey Flowers was covering Davante Adams. The inability of the Seahawks team, the scheme, trusting the scheme more than the personnel has been the issue with the Seahawks in the last forever.
I mean, so do you think that if the Seahawks had a different coaching staff that they would have gone farther in the playoffs than the divisional round?
Absolutely, I do.
I don't believe that. I don't think that talent, there's not top 4 talent in the NFL on this roster as good as Russell Wilson
what
is.
What matters in the NFL? This is the, Russell Wilson is a fucking magician. Like, did you see what he did in this game? We're talking at 4th string left guard, 2nd string center.
3rd string left guard, right?
3rd string left guard.
I mean, unless you want to say Posick was in there
okay,
as well.
3rd string left guard, 2nd string center, and Russell Wilson just makes shit happen. Do you think, okay, if we just take a step back and say to ourselves, Pete Carroll is a defensive guy, what was the major deficiency of the Seahawks this season? Was it the offense?
No.
So let's say that we have a coach who's a better defensive guy and they're 10 spots higher in DVOA, or they have that much better of a scheme.
Number 6 in DVOA with this personnel?
Or they're number 10 in DVOA, or they have a scheme. They have a scheme that can adjust at various times. Like, where does Russell Wilson rank as far as best quarterbacks in the NFL?
Somewhere in the top 5.
And how many of those players are still playing right now?
1.
Well, who even are your top 5 of quarterbacks?
I mean, Mahomes is the only guy who's left playing as a top 5 quarterback, unless I guess Tannehill. You can make a case for
We've
Tannehill.
We've got Tannehill.
I mean,
I'm just saying the Seahawks
have Aaron Rodgers
got to this
in
point
there.
Because of one player and one player only. That's it.
I don't disagree with that. And I think the biggest bummer to me is that you watch what Russell Wilson did in the second half, and obviously he's not going to run like that every game throughout the long regular season. He's not going to expose himself to the risk of injury and that sort of thing. But to see what he does unleashed in those situations and know that barring something unforeseen, he's never going to get a chance to just do that for an entire season. That is a tremendous disappointment.
I take back saying one player, one player only, because Tyler Lockett, 9 receptions on 10 targets for 136 yards. DK Metcalf, 4 receptions on 5 targets for 59 yards. Jacob Hollister, 5 receptions on 6 targets for 47 yards. Like,
and only 1 fumbled reception today. It wasn't even fumbled.
I got to say, the Malik Turner stat line is pretty bleak. 0 for 0.
It's not the best.
3 targets. But it was a curse in his last season stat line. But
you know the last time the Seahawks beat the Packers in the
Kill Your Idols.
Jermaine Curse.
But I'm saying that it's not just about Russell Wilson, but like Russell Wilson makes receivers good. Tyler Lockett is an excellent receiver. DK Metcalf looks like he's going to be an excellent receiver. But also,
should we
like,
talk about the rushing stats today?
Jacob Hollister is not like he's not a division round of the playoffs tight end, but Russell Wilson makes him look like a good player.
Should we talk about the rushing stats today? Russell Wilson 7 for 64. All other players, well, David Moore went 1 for 6. That was fine.
Luke Wilson
technically had one yes because the pitch from Wilson. I'm surprised that gained yardage. I thought that was no gain. The running backs, Marshawn Lynch and Travis Homer, only got 3 carries, the latter. 15 carries for 39 yards today.
Okay, let me just take a step back here. And your little shrug that you were doing. No. Don't just... How many years do we get of Russell Wilson in his prime? This man is not young. He's 31 years old. We probably have 8 to 10 years left at most.
is that I can't tell if that's serious or a joke.
That's serious? Really, this is the modern NFL.
Of him in his prime?
I mean, you could be in your prime until you're 38, 41.
Can be, but I think realistically we should only expect probably another 4 years, let's say.
Losing a season every single time that Russell Wilson ends a season in his prime and doesn't win the Super Bowl is a mistake. Like, that's what we're talking about. How many times in our lifetime are we ever going to see a quarterback as good as Russell Wilson?
On the Seahawks?
On the Seahawks.
He will probably be the best quarterback we will see in our lifetimes.
And we just fucking wasted a year of him.
But
wasted... We wasted a year because Ugo Amadi was covering Davante Adams on 3rd and 8.
Wasted implies because that Trey only Flowers, thing that you get
sorry,
out of it is going to the NFC
never
Championship
seen
game.
Anybody, since my flag football days, that is like Davante Adams was Tobias out there and the defenders were the goddamn Chiefs or whatever. Like the 0-6 Chiefs. And he's just running free, right? Like, the touchdown that Davante Adams scored in the first half. Hello! It's not that hard to recognize where the talent is on the Packers. And to not even game plan for it is a mistake. And, like, the Seahawks, we knew this. We talked about this on the weekly podcast going in. They spent all of their resources worried about Aaron Jones. And granted, they, for the most part, shut down Aaron Jones.
After his first carry, yes.
Which is great. Brilliant stuff. Love it. But maybe, just maybe, you just put the right people on the right players. Is it that hard? Like, I'm sorry. Am I crazy for thinking this? Is this like you just don't understand football?
I just think just put the right players on the right people on the right players. That's a
seems
very
to
like
be able to figure out how to
no,
get
not every time. Other team seems to be able to figure out because a lot of teams go 1-15 in seasons. A lot of teams are terrible. Like
well, those
if
teams
you actually
don't have Russell Wilson, you're out here arguing the fucking record as a pro for this defense. The defense was bad. Do you disagree with that?
The defense was average, and it had exploitable flaws.
I mean, were you not? Any time that you had a chance to game plan for this defense, and if you took a coach like Matt LaFleur, who is a good coach at, we assume, picking apart defenses like this, they picked it apart easily. And like the Seahawks, all things considered, did quite good against this defense. We have to give it to Jadeveon Clowney for playing a beastly game, who he needs to be resigned this offseason.
100% agree.
You have to just pay him whatever. That's it. Like, you got nothing else. LJ Collier, your first round draft pick, was inactive. And you know what? We can finally put a bow on his making a difference at some point this season. RIP to that. Thanks, Pete. Thank you for that draft pick. But I blame John Schneider for it too.
We're not in the draft room. Obviously, philosophically, the Seahawks place more value on run stuffing defensive ends than most organizations do. But that doesn't, you know, like,
you're going to defend
ultimately,
the LJ Collier pick now?
I'm not going to defend
first,
it. I'm saying
you're going to shrug Russell Wilson losing a season of his prime, and well, now you're going to defend the LJ Collier pick where he was healthy scratch?
No, but two things. Ultimately, it's up to the GM to scout the players. Pete Carroll's not out there scouting through the entire season. And number two, drafting is all random anyway. So the process, I don't think, was good, but the fact that the results have been this bad does not necessarily mean anything.
Okay, I've thought about the draft a lot earlier today. And my thought, well, I was thinking about Frank Clark, because Frank Clark's out there ending the game against the Chiefs. And it was like, we understand all the moves that like sort of got us to this place, right? They trade Frank Clark. It's fine. If you don't want to pay Frank Clark.
We were happy about that trade.
Near high. And I still don't think it was the wrong trade, especially with what came, because basically you're swapping out Frank Clark for Jadeveon Clowney and minus $20 million. They're probably going to have to pay Jadeveon, or maybe like $12 million.
Like this season?
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess so.
They're probably going to have to pay Jadeveon this offseason if they want him back, which...
It's Jadeveon.
Jadeveon.
Not correcting you all year on that. I was hoping you would eventually figure it out. No.
You just feel called out on the Ugo Amadi thing, so you have to just get back at me. That's like a near swap talent-wise, right? I think Jadeveon's probably better than Frank Clark is because of how much of an impact he has in the run game. But the reason that I'm like, all of this made sense, everything about this made sense, is it amounted to DK Metcalf.
Getting that pick.
Do we agree with that? Like, and drafting, getting a game-changing wide receiver like DK Metcalf is such a difficult thing to do.
I mean, the fact that the Seahawks drafted him in the first round makes up for the fact that they drafted LJ Collier at the end of the second round.
I mean, and I don't want to say, like, basically, if you can look at a draft of whatever 8 to 10 players that the Seahawks took this year, and one of them is a major impact player, it probably was a good draft.
Yeah.
It just didn't happen to be their first round pick. Like, yes, they missed on that pick, and
we'll see about Blair and Barton.
Yeah, and I mean, Cody Barton was out there. We didn't call his name, right? Like, we didn't see Cody Barton in a good way or a bad way, and that's probably a good thing.
Yeah.
So, I think that they made some good picks, and it's just like the priorities is what was wrong. And the same way in this game, the priority was they went into it saying we're going to stop Aaron Jones, and they let Aaron Rodgers hit Davante Adams on the most important situations, and they lost the game because of it.
But I think if you're going to complain about Pete Carroll's strategic decisions, which understandably we should, I think you have to also acknowledge that there is some alchemy with Pete Carroll that convinces his teams to maintain belief in situations where they probably shouldn't have it, including when they're down 21-3 at halftime on the road.
Let me ask you a question. Why are we giving that to Pete Carroll and not to Russell Wilson? Who gets this alchemy?
Pete Carroll did win a playoff game with a 7-9 team in 2010 that went like what 4-12 under Jim Elmore the previous season. Spike.
Like, I mean, he managed to go out and get Marshawn Lynch, right?
He bothered John Schneider enough that Schneider eventually traded for
the PCJS combo. But like, Russell Wilson is it? That's the thing. You're giving every feeling that we ever had, and I didn't think I'd be coming in this hard on Pete. Every feeling that we ever had about Pete Carroll, and granted, they put together amazing defense for the first 5 years of this run, but they systematically ran off or didn't re-sign most of that defense,
which we should acknowledge
to replace them.
Was partially a function of salary cap situation. They couldn't afford to have that entire defense anymore.
But we should also acknowledge that they got fucking lucky, because the way that you can tell the difference between luck and skill is that you can do it again, and they haven't been able to do it again.
Fair.
Shit. Oh, that was the full beer. I mic dropped onto them. But what they were able to do is they got Russell Wilson, which Grant, like, look, I'm brilliant. They got Russell Wilson as a third round pick. It's amazing. Why is it that we give credit to Pete Carroll for these teams always staying in it, having resilience? I watched Wisconsin in the Rose Bowl against Oregon, and Russell Wilson looked like the same Russell Wilson, whether Brett Bielema was his coach or Pete Carroll. It wasn't like Russell Wilson is out there crumbling into... He wasn't Thanos. Like, he didn't disappear. Like, Russell Wilson was Russell Wilson before Pete Carroll saw Russell Wilson.
I just think the other thing is there's a lot of shitty coaches out there. And everyone's like, oh, what if they hire Pete and get a better coach? And, like, the odds are pretty good that you're going to fire Pete and you're going to end up with John Donovan as your offensive coordinator.
What if you get rid of Marcus Mariota? You've got an average quarterback.
But Marcus Mariota wasn't an average quarterback. Marcus Mariota did not win a Super Bowl for Tennessee.
I think that Pete Carroll.
Like, if you go through the actual list of coaches,
of head coaches,
I think he's
in
the top 10. I don't think that there are 10 coaches in the NFL that I would take over him.
Do you want to pull up this tweet from our friend Nathan Ernst from yesterday? He listed out the 10 coaches who he felt like were ahead. And I actually do think there's a little bit of bias in it. But you look at it and you're like, most of these, it's a tough argument.
I mean, some of it is like once you get outside, you know, there's tiers rather than ordinal. Like, there's probably seven or eight coaches, I think, that are clearly better. Like, you know.
You're going to see a list. Keep scrolling.
Well, this is the padding to the list, which is Matt Nagy.
Well, do the original list first before the...
Bill O'Brien. I don't think Bill O'Brien had a really strong strategic day.
That's
today.
The padding. Look at the original list. You just said he was in the top 10. There's one that I dispute.
Okay, Mike Vrabel, Andy Reid, Mike Tomlin, Bill Belichick, Sean McDermott, which I do not agree with, John Harbaugh, Frank Reich I think is debatable, Doug Peterson I think is debatable, Kyle Shanahan, Sean McVay, Sean Payton, Matt LaFleur. I definitely don't think Matt LaFleur belongs in this.
LaFleur is the one to me where it's like, you fucking led your team to average in DVOA. I don't agree with
my list when I went through this exercise, I think, was Reid, Tomlin, Belichick, Harbaugh, Shanahan, McVay, and Payton. I think that was my list.
You had Tomlin in there?
Yes.
I think Reich is a questionable one. I think Doug Peterson is actually a bad coach.
But I think there's...
And I mean, that's, but that's part of it. Is that like, I think should be in there is Mike Zimmer too. Where, like, Mike Zimmer is playing with worse talent than the Seahawks have.
Their defense has been slightly better, but I think that one of the things that happens is these frustrations about a coach build up over time because you're following them week after week. Well, you're not following Frank Reich week after week. You're not following, you know, Sean McDermott week after week to see what they may or may not do.
Frank Reich has a question mark too.
Like, I it's not a fair comparison.
I agree. There are a lot of coaches in like sort of a chunk range, but Pete Carroll's not at the top. I'm sorry, but like,
but you can't hire expecting to get a top 10 coach. That's not a realistic way to hire a coach. You have to hire expecting a replacement level coach.
What if you flipped Pete Carroll with Eric Bieniemy?
I mean, we have no idea what Eric Bieniemy thinks about game management because he's never done it before in his life. I would love for Eric Bieniemy to get that opportunity. I just don't think that it should be for firing Pete Carroll.
I'm happy
it should
with
be
Pete
for
Carroll.
A team
I
that
don't
has fired
think
a bad
should
coach.
Fire Pete Carroll, but also they still should have had Ugo Amadi defending Davante Adams in the most important third down of the game. That doesn't like.
Should we talk about the punt? Because I feel like people are more upset about the punt than this. I mean, if it were 4th and 5, that would be one thing, but 4th and 10 is a low percentage probability.
It's real close.
I think the case for it is that, okay, so...
The game isn't over if you punt it.
Yeah, say you don't...
Or if you go for it and don't get it.
Say you don't get it, Green Bay's in field goal range, but that only puts you down 8, and maybe then they're not as aggressive about taking that shot on 3rd down to try to end the game in the same way that they were as things actually played out. I think that's the case for it, but this to me is another one of these, okay, maybe they lost 1% off their win probability. Like, what are we really doing here?
But you are Pete Carroll in this hypothetical, and possessing the ball is the most important thing that you can do, and you did punt it and never got the ball back.
It's all about the ball.
I mean, it's another situation of trusting your defense when your defense shouldn't be trusted. Like,
I mean, we've talked about this before. Pete Carroll is so fundamentally optimistic that he believes that his team is always going to do the thing, whether it's to make the comeback or to get the stop.
I feel like percentage chances of victory wise, though, man, it's a tough one. I bet win probability didn't go down by that much by punting and may have even increased because, like, look, if you could take...
doubt that.
Let's say that you could take the situation that they got into when Green Bay passed on 2nd down of 3rd and 8, right? With a timeout left. Or 2 timeouts left? 3rd and 8 with 2 timeouts left.
1 timeout left at that. Or no, 2 timeouts.
Because
yeah,
they
Rogers
called the one on first
incomplete,
down
yeah.
And then incomplete on 2nd down. 3rd and 8 with 2 timeouts left, your win probability is higher in that point than it was going for it on 4th and 10. Because you're also going to get the ball in relatively good field position. So like... I don't know. And like the frustrating thing is that Russ had to take one brutal sack the entire game and it had to happen at the worst moment. Right? But also, if we could take a step back from your little Pete Carroll defense here. First half, they get an 8-yard run. This was the third series. They get an 8-yard run from Marshawn Lynch on 1st down, which literally God has to open up the fucking offensive line. Like the gates of heaven have to open up for Marshawn Lynch to get an 8-yard gain at this point, right? It's the longest, well, I guess it's probably not the longest run that he's had as a Seahawks. I think he had a longer run against the Niners, but it is a very rare occurrence for the Seahawks to run for 8 yards with a running back on 1st down. And if it's the end of the game when they're in urgent mode, they're passing that ball. They're play actioning on 2nd down. But instead, the Seahawks run on 2nd down, run on 3rd down, punt the ball. And that's not the most efficient way to run offense. And if you're telling me that Brian Schottenheimer said to himself, I need to run right here, like, I don't believe it.
What do you mean he said to himself, I need to run right here?
I think this is a Pete Carroll thing. This is from the top down.
I mean,
like,
Schottenheimer was hired because of the fact that he agrees with that philosophy.
I think
generally.
Shotty called a pretty good game.
In the second half, there was a lot of play action. There was a lot of play action throughout the game, but particularly in the second half, even when they weren't really running the ball that much, it was kind of similar to the Houston game a couple years ago where they kept using play action, even though they were trying to block Jadeveon and Clowney with... Who were they trying to block him with? Some backup tight end at that point. I can't even remember who it was anyway.
Oh, God.
It may have been Luke Wilson.
After seeing him firsthand, that was not a good decision.
No, not a great call.
If they ran that offense the whole game, why isn't that the offense? For other teams, it is.
Because at the end of the game, the risk-reward tolerance is different than it is at the start of the game. And I agree that they should have come out more aggressively. But, okay, we know that running on 3rd and short is generally more effective than passing on 3rd and short, correct?
What about 2nd and short?
2nd and short there's a stronger case that they should have gone play action and tried to pick up a chunk play. But I don't blame them for wanting to just pick up the first down at that point. I often feel a lot more comfortable if they just pick up the first down. So, again, I think this is one that's, you know, if the game had gone differently or if it had been a different team, you wouldn't blink at it.
I don't know. I think I would blink at it.
And it wasn't clear at that point. It is clear at that point of the game, as it became eventually, that they were just not going to have any success running the ball with this offensive line and these running backs against this defense.
Did we not see the last week? Like,
but Philadelphia is a very poor run, a good run defense, an elite run defense, and Green Bay has been a very poor run defense over the course of the year. And I think that ultimately points to like the fundamental problem. Well, yeah, because of the fact that we mentioned this earlier. They were on their second left guard, depending on how you count Pusick, and Dwayne Brown coming back from surgery, and their backup center. But
they had an opening, and they didn't take it. Like, am I wrong about this? There was a window for them.
I just think that's hindsight. Like, if they would have picked up the second down on, you know, if they would have run for 2 yards, which is not that hard on second down, like, no one would ever give that a second thought.
But this really kind of came close to ending the game. You were saying that the issue is that they got down 18-3. It's moments like that that got them down 18-3.
They didn't have enough urgency coming out, but I don't think that running the ball in short yardage situations is the evidence of that.
Why in the second half did they not run the ball in short yardage situations?
Keeps the clock going. I mean,
they knew it was better. They know what gets first downs. And when you play action on second and two, you get a first down.
You don't always get a first down.
Tyler Lockett was so... There was a fourth and one that we saw, right? This is the one that they picked it up to Lockett, right?
There was...
No human being has been more open than him. But no, they're just going to shove it up the middle with Marshawn Lynch two consecutive plays. A running back who hasn't been in the NFL all season. Like, I understand you're trying to see it from their perspective, but like every time basically that they play action on second, third and short, fourth and short, they've been successful.
In the last few weeks that has been very successful for them, yes.
Well, anyway, I hope you stoked this offseason about that second and two run.
I think the general of the outcomes are pretty good when you run on second and two. I don't think it's that bad. They might be better if you pass.
We're not talking generally with everybody. We're talking this team with their running back who wasn't on the team until 3 weeks ago. And Phil Haynes, I guess Phil Haynes wasn't playing at that point.
He was not yet.
But even still, a offensive line unit that hasn't been able to run block.
I just want to see Russ turn loose 1 year. Just 1 year. Like, maybe if Pete Carroll could take a sabbatical.
If you want to see Russ turn loose, the answer is not this current...
It isn't. I know that.
Coaching staff. Like, that's the reality. I
think it can get a lot worse. If there were a lot worse coaching performances this weekend than there were by Peter Clay Carroll and the Seahawks.
Fine. Whatever. None of those coaches have a quarterback like Russell Wilson. I don't think that Lamar Jackson...
Is Deshaun Watson that different from Russell Wilson? I think Wilson's better, but they're in a similar ballpark.
Deshaun is nowhere near Russell Wilson.
Nowhere near Russell Wilson?
Dude, just... Okay. Russ is a unique beast. And he's never once been handled correctly. Second and third in QBR.
That was playoffs, though. They were almost identical in the regular season, too. They were sixth and seventh.
I mean, do I think that Bill O'Brien is a worse coach than Pete Carroll? Sure, but is Bill O'Brien like...
But Bill O'Brien's like an average coach.
Bill O'Brien has been about to be fired every single season, and now somehow he's maybe the GM also.
Definitely not an average GM. And thanks again for Jadeveon Clowney. God.
I don't know. Whatever. Who cares? It's frustrating to see this game because I don't think
the
Seahawks...
But frustrating is not the same thing as bad. That's one of my biggest complaints with people is that they confuse frustrating with bad.
Not having Shaquille Griffin on Davante Adams on 3rd and 8 was bad.
Okay.
That was more than frustrating.
Fine. It's one play out of 120.
It wasn't bad. You're failing to recognize just how good Russell Wilson is. And just how sad it is that he has to be saddled with this defense and this scheme.
To think that there was someone on this podcast who once said he was the 12th best quarterback in the NFL.
Yeah, you shouldn't have said that.
The one negative review in Pelicancast history on iTunes.
He had one bad year where I think he was hurt the entire year. Is that right?
That may have been the year after the ankle injury.
That was the year but after he stepped
down
on him.
Season.
Anyway, it was a frustrating game. Like, Aaron Rodgers didn't win this game. The people of the internet are probably going to be all in Ben's mentions saying that Aaron Rodgers won this game, but I don't think that's the case.
But he played well. He averaged 9 yards an attempt. He made some difficult throws in tough situations. Okay.
I just don't know what to say.
Well, you said plenty.
It's fine. I do feel like every 50-50 call went the Packers' way, but you know that's what happens when you go to Lambeau. That's why the Packers are 13-3 and being 11th in DVOA. What was their record at home this year, by the way? Cue that up.
They were 7-1 at home during the
year. Oh, 7-1 at home. The home field advantage doesn't exist anymore.
Well, they were 6-2 on the road. They only lost 3 games. Like, there's not that many to go around if you only lose 3 games.
Except in Green Bay. Home field advantage doesn't exist at home anymore. Except in Green Bay, for some reason. Just your hands go to the face a little bit. The first down that doesn't exist, you don't cross the plane on a touchdown. Inconclusive. Although maybe the Seahawks did benefit from a pretty significant play like that. But it's just like, there were a lot of 50-50 plays in this game that went Green Bay's way. And I'm sorry, I'll still say this. Za'Darius Smith coming through on that encroachment and being able to hit Russell Wilson. The Seahawks scored a touchdown on that series. That is a personal foul. In no way should you be able to hit the quarterback on a bit. If Jadeveon Clowney could have come through and just destroyed
Aaron... Still Jadeveon?
His name is what I say his name is.
Oh, no, it's not.
If Jadeveon Clowney could have come through and just destroyed Aaron Rodgers and hit him like that with no punishment, like, are you kidding me?
Eagles fans have some takes on this.
This is not the same! Are you joking? That was in the field of play. Like, Carson Wentz got hit during a play in the game. They let Za'Darius Smith tackle Russell Wilson violently. You could see his face cringe as it was happening on a play that didn't even happen. That is a personal foul. Everybody else had stopped, but he just forgot. He just couldn't hear the whistle. And just, that is a personal foul.
I think that's real and easy to interpret that way when it's the other team.
Also, personal fouls should be reviewable. Tyler Lockett taking a blow to the head from Kevin King on a play where Kevin King gets injured because he's leaning with his head.
Should have been a personal foul.
Should have been a personal foul. Personal fouls should be reviewable. If pass interference is reviewable, personal fouls should be reviewable, especially blows to the head.
So well in the Pac-12 having targeting be reviewable.
Pac-12 officiating is not bad because targeting is reviewable.
That is not the reason. No, it long predates that.
The Seahawks didn't lose this game because of that. Jimmy Graham didn't get a first down on the last meaningful play of the game, but that wasn't the reason they lost the game. The game was basically over at that point anyway. They lost this game because they schemed very badly against Devontae Adams, and that's
well,
it.
Well, they would have just gone
okay,
for it.
Let me just talk about your Aaron Rodgers playing his perfect game. How many yards did he gain on 2 wide-open throws to Devontae Adams?
I mean, I don't know.
How many yards?
Wide open.
40.
40
was
the touchdown,
yes. Fucking open. Are you kidding me on the second one?
That's a difficult pass to
Josh
complete.
Allen could have made that throw.
I don't think the next gen stats would show that as a 100% completion percentage. That one picked up 32.
The first one?
No, the second one picked up 32. The first one picked up
He gets 40 for the yardage. It was a 40-yard touchdown pass.
Yeah, the second one is the completion that ended the game. So
I'm talking about the touchdown pass where...
Still 40 yards. I don't know what you're
talking about. I'm talking about the first one in the first half where he got the long touchdown against nobody. You don't remember that pass?
There was a 20-yard touchdown pass to Devontae Adams.
Okay, so he got 60 yards right there on 2 wide-open plays.
Uh-huh.
Then what's his yards per attempt after that?
I mean, it becomes significantly less if you take out those 2 plays, yes.
I'm just saying, like, giving Rodgers credit for this, you're giving somebody credit for somebody else's work here. That's like giving the boss credit when the employees are doing everything.
That's the case of all passing, that it's a split between the offensive line, the receivers, and the quarterback.
Okay. Cool game. future Hall of Famer. I thought they were talking about Devontae Adams, where they're like the play by the future Hall of Famer, but they're actually talking about Aaron Rodgers, funnily enough.
Just because Aaron Rodgers has been ineffective the last few regular seasons does not mean that he's not a Hall of Famer. He had a Hall of Fame caliber peak. And it turns out that he performs a little better
I'm going to be cheering for Richard Sherman next week. I don't give a fuck! I'm going to be cheering for Richard Sherman next week. I don't even care. Let the Niners win a championship. Josh Sainer be terrible. I'm going to be cheering for Richard Sherman against Aaron Rodgers because... I have a Richard Sherman jersey that I got when he was on the 49ers. I might go put it on right now.
If we know anything about Aaron Rodgers, it's that he will never, ever throw it to Sherman's side of the field. I don't know if he did it that Sunday Night Football game, so I didn't really watch that.
I don't think he threw a pass in that game, actually. I think he didn't complete every play.
Complete a pass.
Let me just crunch the numbers. It says here he took a knee on every single play of the game.
Huh. Weird choice, but you know.
How many yards he passed for in that game?
I have a guess. I bet over-under is 87.
He passed for 104.
Okay.
And it took him 20 receptions to get there.
More than Ryan Tannehill in either playoff game for the Titans.
Oh, my God. Oh.
Well, this has been a season. Of all the seasons in Seahawks history, this has been one of them.
I've been very negative, but... all things considered, this was a great season. Like, we far exceeded expectations. We were in it down to the last punt.
We survived it. It did not drive us to...
human beings?
Yeah. It seemed dicey at some point whether we were going to survive it, but we did.
We'll see what happens after today. You may not survive it after this podcast.
Oh, no. I'm just going to bring in your children to wrestle you again.
It was a very good season and it exceeded our expectations. And I think that we have to...
turn our attention to Husky men's basketball?
We have to really be thankful for having a quarterback like Russell Wilson in Seattle.
We should definitely not take that for granted.
This game that he played and those plays that he made in the second half were incredible. And I just hope that next year they are able to fill in some of the gaps around him by wasting their first round pick. And maybe drafting somebody in the second round who's good on defense. But
that would be great.
Russell Wilson is incredible to watch on a week-to-week basis. He is maybe, along with Mahomes and Lamar, the most exciting quarterbacks in the NFL. And unlike Mahomes and Lamar, he's been doing this for damn near a decade now. And it's a thrilling thing that we get to continue to see. And like
take it for granted.
I leave this game frustrated that the Seahawks lost and some of the things that happened, but also just like, God, Russell damn did it again. Russell damn Wilson. Like
basically every Seahawks playoff loss, Russell Wilson plays out of his mind.
He got them right there, right? And even this was cold weather, Russ, doesn't matter, right? It didn't rain. But
I was a little worried after the first series.
And he missed a couple throws early, but once he settled in, there was no better quarterback on earth, basically.
Yeah.
So it has been a fun season, and it's, you know, like we've gotten there only were a couple more weeks that we could have even been paying attention to football. So you don't care at all, which must be nice for you.
It was all gravy to me at a certain point. I mean, I wasn't going to be like not caring if they won the game. I was going to be very excited if they won the game. I just was emotionally protecting myself against the loss, stealing myself against the game. Like, there's
always... if they go for that fourth down, they're probably picking it up, too.
I
know they are. Just give us the opportunity. Give us the chance, Pete. Give us the chance.
So we'll be back with more Seahawks postmortem, more from the scene of the crime later this week in our usual pod. We'll discuss why Husky men's basketball season looks like a lost year.
God.
And then we will start talking about teriyaki because it's about that time.
Is Parasite a bleak movie?
Oh, yeah.
Is it? Oh, yeah. I'm going to watch that this week.
Just go with your mood. If you wish to be nihilistic about things, I recommend Parasite.
I'm going to review the Grammy nominations. I'm going to watch Parasite. I'm going to listen to the Justin Bieber single. We're getting into it.
Off-season Felton cast already in full effect. All right, on that note.
Well, we will be back in another 8 months? 7 months before there's a new Seahawks season?
A little less than eight. There'll be a live show around then.
It's going to be a long, long summer. And it's going to be a long spring, a long summer. And thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening all season long. And hopefully we'll continue to do so beyond this Seahawks season. Bye.
Go teriyaki.